The House will come to order. The clerk will open the voting system for purposes of verifying the soon-to-be presence of a quorum. A quorum is finally present. We want to recognize a... When we recess, we are under third reading of Senate bills. The chair requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We want to recognize a third grade class from Sumner Elementary School in Salem. They actually did not know we were going to be in session this afternoon, so they were surprised to see us all here. But I think she's in the third row there, Madeline, in that orangish red shirt. Madeline is here. Her mom is up here waving to her. So welcome, Madeline, and her third grade class from Sumner Elementary. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Are there further courtesies? Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed House Bills 3151, 3418, 2014, 2105, 2139, 2144, 2217, 2744, 2987, 3462, 2199, 2424, 2475, 2529, 2636, 3295, 2619, adopted HJM 10 and 22. Passed the following House Bills as amended by the Senate. House Bill 2177, 2255, 2426, 2578, 2962, 2427, 2435, 3116, 2067, 2107, 2188, 2478, 2623, 2794. Concurred in House amendments repassed in Bill 124 and 952.
Third reading of Senate bills. Where we left off, we carried over a couple from this morning to this afternoon, so we've got... On our list, I believe, Senate Bill 867, Senate Bill 428, and then we'll jump to where we left off, Senate Bill 112 and following. So first up, Senate Bill 867. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 867, relating to public accountancy and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 867A. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Colleagues, this is the so-called CPA bill. To help certified public accountants, and we all live in a world where state borders vanish with the click of a mouse. And in today's ever-changing marketplace, many CPA firms do business in multiple states. So with that, a majority of your House Business and Labor Committee bring you House or Senate Bill 867 to enhance CPA mobility. Senate Bill 867 basically says it's okay to come to Oregon and practice accounting without having to jump through all the hoops of getting a license to practice specifically here. Now keep in mind, all CPAs have to pass the same exam, and like attorneys, they are usually licensed by the state in which they practice, but it's hard to get a special permit or license in every single state where you practice and renew it every year. This legislation is part of a movement across the country by groups like the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, the American Institute of CPAs, and the Oregon Society of CPAs. There are currently 43 other states that allow this practice privilege. Three more just passed similar legislation, and four are pending. This week, New Hampshire just passed the same law. CPAs are looking for a uniform system to allow them to practice across state lines instead of the current patchwork system of laws. In fact, in the long run, Oregon-based CPAs will benefit from this type of reciprocity with other states. Oregon CPAs can already practice in these 43 other states. There will still be consumer protections provided by the Oregon Board of Accountancy. Alan Steger, one of my constituents, has been a CPA for over 40 years and has served on the Oregon Board of Accountancy. Here's just part of his testimony in our House Business and Labor Committee. Senate Bill 867 provides the State Board of Accountancy with the right to discipline those CPAs if they violate the public trust or board rules. There have been no documented lapses in public protection in the other states which have adopted this or similar language. There are 43 other states that do this. This legislation has the right balance of trust and public protection, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Barker.
Thank you. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
I apologize for not having a chance to get there and not bring this to you earlier. If an accountant from Alabama is not a very good accountant and has done some things but not really been convicted, but maybe used to work for Enron or somebody, How would we know that if he came to Oregon and came to practice, or she came to Oregon and said, here's my accountant ticket and I'm ready to go to work? How would we know about the background of that person?
Mr. Speaker, and I would just say that the accountant has to be licensed in the state from which they come.
Okay, thank you. Additional question?
An additional question from the carrier? Will the carrier yield?
Sure.
Just so to clarify that, so we really wouldn't know about somebody's background. For example, if it's a physician who tries to come to Oregon, you know, the medical board checks backwards to be sure the person has a good ethical background and so on. And so.
Well, it's my understanding, since they do all have to pass the same exam and they still have to have the license from the state from which they come, you can check on their background from the state from which they come still. And if it's unacceptable to you, don't hire them, I guess. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. That's fine. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. To the bill.
To the bill.
I've just learned about this bill. I have some grave concerns because reciprocity, in my way of thinking, is you'd actually have some way of kind of a checks and balances. Somebody could come to Oregon from anywhere in these other states that we don't know anything about their background. We don't know if they're honest. They may have had some difficulty in their state, but not risen to the level of being convicted or losing their license. And here they could be practicing here. They could run back to their state, and who's going to go do the follow-up and protect the consumer here in Oregon? And that's my main concern, is to protect the users here. And I guess you could say, well, you could do some background check. I don't know exactly how one would do that to somebody out of state or if they held a license in multiple states even. It would be helpful if they had to register when they get to Oregon, so at least we would know in Oregon who is practicing accounting here. Thank you. I urge a no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I voted no on this bill in committee and will be voting no on the floor as well. Just for a couple of points, you know, I think that the issues involved in this bill do need addressed. It would be good to have more uniformity and reciprocity throughout the nation. And as mentioned, you know, much of the licensing is the same across this nation. But that really isn't the issue in this bill. We already have an ability to have reciprocity right now with accountants across different states. But the big piece on this bill is as the representative from Aloha had pointed out, is the accountability piece is missing in this bill. If an accountant from another state runs into a trouble and then moves to another state and gets a license, they can come into this state and practice without notifying our board. Our board has no records on who is practicing in this state under this bill. And the due process for a consumer or for anybody else or for this Board of Accountancy or the Attorney General's office to go after this type of enforcement, I believe, is going to be difficult. I think the Attorney General actually mentioned that as well and would probably be costly. There's a lot of pieces of this bill that I think need to be addressed, but this bill doesn't do it. The Oregon State Board of Accountancy is unanimously opposed to this bill. I admit that the Association of CPAs supports this bill, but they didn't get on the same page and work on the issue and solve this problem, as we often want people to get together and come up with a better consensus bill. And this is not it. When we have a state board who unanimously opposes a bill and comes forward in committee and offers many good points about why this is not a good idea, I think we should heed that message. I'm very concerned that the issues that need to be addressed in this bill, the concepts are not really addressed. We, you know, regardless of whether they have the same educational requirements, doesn't have anything to do with whether or not our state has the ability to know who is doing business in this state and has the ability to look at their background and look at their records and make sure they live up to the same standards. I recognize there's 42 other states that have some sort of reciprocity laws, but they're not all the same. They don't have the same sort of statutes and penalties and enforcement mechanism in each state. So, in fact, a violation here may not be a violation in another state. And I'm very concerned that this bill really doesn't address the issue, and we should work on this bill in a future date. I believe this is a bad bill to pass right now for the state of Oregon. I urge a no vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
Bill.
Colleagues, I didn't intend to speak today, but I do want to say that, you know, we are accountable to our constituents, particularly when our constituents are our parents. I want to say that, you know, my father, my stepfather, 32 years CPA with Willamette Industries, long history as a CPA, many, many friendships tied, and currently retired. However, this is something that I searched out to the group of CPAs to say, would you look this bill over and see what it does, what it's asking? Is this overreaching? Is it wrong? And also forwarded the comments from the Board of Accountancy. What I got back was basically that the Board of Accountancy never made their case to stop this bill. This bill is a good idea. Basically, we're allowing our folks to go from Oregon to any other state, but we're not allowing other states to come in here. Think about the way the industry works, and think about the need for this. Some of these large corporations may be based in Oregon or maybe based somewhere else, but being very productive here in Oregon. Why make it difficult for them to do business in our state? The bottom line is these are folks that are licensed CPAs. It is a national test. They all take the same standard test. You know, when you say this about bad actors, 43 states have taken not the exact same litigation, not the exact same legislation, but they've acted on this. That's 43 other states, which I can appreciate. The other idea that any state board should come forward with legislation and say this is why we don't like it and then we listen to them, certainly we take that into account. But think about some of the other state boards that haven't exactly gotten their way through the legislative process because we've had to step forward and say, you know what, our constituents are speaking about this to us right now and this isn't a good idea. Not always popular to be effective, but it's effective. So, folks, all I can say is, from folks that I respect greatly in the industry of CPAs, not on the Board of Accountancy, they've urged this bill. They like this bill. I personally like this bill as well. And I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
Sure.
She does.
Thank you. I appreciate that. If I had a complaint against my CPA and the CPA was licensed somewhere else but not in Oregon, who would I file my complaint with?
It's my understanding that if you had a complaint against any accountant that you've hired here in the state, you would go to the Oregon Board of Accountancy and file your complaint.
Okay. A further question?
Another question, the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
Sure.
She does.
Thank you. One of the provisions of this bill, as I understand it, in Section 3, is that the Board of Accountancy may not require any kind of a notice to them that an accountant is actually working in Oregon. How would the Board of Accountancy go about investigating a complaint involving such an accountant who hasn't informed the Board under this statute that they're even been practiced in Oregon?
It's my understanding that after they take the complaint and information, they would start an investigation. They could find out where they're from, and they could go back to that state. Complaint-driven process.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this is not a reciprocity bill. This bill is a free practice of accountancy bill for anyone who's licensed in any other state. Appropriate oversight by the Oregon Board of Accountancy. Accountancy, like other professions, is a state-regulated enterprise practice. It involves state licenses, and the person responsible for making certain that people practice the profession competently and ethically resides in the state where the work occurred. Now, I want to talk for a minute about the existing law. You can find the existing law in Section 3, beginning, I think, on page 4 of the bill. And it is very instructive, because the current law is a reciprocity law. It already allows for the board to authorize a holder of a license.
Nolan, Representative Nolan Eales.
Have I been talking for 5 minutes? My time sense is really shot if that's the case. Thank you. I'll keep going. The current law says that the Board of Accountancy may authorize a holder of a license with a principal place of business in another state to practice a public accountancy in this state if the holder holds in good standing a valid certificate and license to be certified public accountant from another state that is verified to be of substantial equivalence as defined in, and then there's a statute number, another state that is not verified to be of substantial equivalency as defined in, but the holder's skills are verified to be of substantial equivalency as defined in another statute. That is a reciprocity law. We already have a reciprocity law. Any accountant who is licensed in another state who either has equivalent rules or can demonstrate that he or she has the skills necessary to practice in Oregon, they're already authorized under Oregon law to practice here because they have a license in another state. This proposal, this amendment, says that the Board of Accountancy may not require, as a condition of practicing public accountancy under this section, an authorized holder to A, provide notice that the holder practices or intends to practice public accountancy in this state. They may not ask accountant from another state to let them know that the accountant is practicing in Oregon. Colleagues, this bill is not only utterly unnecessary, it is dangerous. It allows accountants coming in from other states to practice here unbeknownst to the Board of Accountancy. And it prevents the Board of Accountancy from even asking about them unless there is a complaint made. I'm less familiar with the Board of Accountancy than I am with other boards, but I will tell you that boards that are generally responsible for the regulation of the practice of a profession, in their rules also have the authority to prevent the unauthorized practice of that profession. This is routinely done by boards by checking telephone directories and by taking complaints and by dealing in other ways with people who purport to be licensed but who are not. This complicates substantially the problem. Now, yes, there are 42 or 43 states with reciprocity. Oregon already has reciprocity, real reciprocity, in which the Board of Accountancy here is responsible for making certain that accountants who practice in Oregon practice competently and ethically. We don't need this bill. This is a dangerous bill. It removes authority from the board to properly regulate this profession. I urge a no vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, we vetted this out very thoroughly in our committee. It is a zero impact for the state of Oregon. We ask how much money had you spent, because they do occasionally get these cases. How much have you spent in the last 5 years going out of state and investigating? The answer was an astounding zero. This is not a problem. You're passing the same tests nationwide. But I'm going to tell you something about licensing in the state of Oregon. I knew a builder that was licensed, bonded in the state of Oregon, and we didn't even check out his background and found out he'd lost his license in Arizona, New Mexico, and California. So that's how good licenses work in the state of Oregon for checking you out. We do not have a problem with this bill. This is a good bill, should pass.
Further discussion, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I was opposed to this bill in committee, and I will be an adamant opponent to it here on the floor today. This bill deserves the moniker of no accountability for out-of-state accountants. In no instance would there be any ability for anyone in the state of Oregon to check up on the credentials of any out-of-state accountant that came in under this so-called reciprocity and understand that an accountant from out-of-state has the ability today to come into the state of Oregon, deposit his or her credentials, and practice accountancy here in the state of Oregon. That reciprocity exists. What this bill does is cut a special deal for out-of-state accountants and makes it easier for them to practice here in the state of Oregon without having to register with our Board of Accountancy than it does for in-state accountants. That's precisely the reason why the State Board of Accountancy unanimously opposes this bill. There simply is no way for anyone in this state to check up on the character, the integrity, or the professional competence of any out-of-state accountant. Should you have a problem with your accountant, should you want to check up on his or her, if they're out-of-state, his or her credentials, how do you do that? Under this bill, they're not even registered in the state. You would have to check and through process of elimination with 49 other states to find out whether the person is even a registered accountant. This, colleagues, would incent those who would be charlatan accountants to come to Oregon because there's no checkup on them. Colleagues, this bill is divorced of any kind of accountability to the citizens of Oregon who would hire an accountant. I strongly urge your no vote on this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
This is not a dangerous bill, not a complicated bill, it's not a bad bill. If you're worried about your money, you better make sure that who you're dealing with is not a charlatan, not a thief, not a crook, is a certified public accountant. It's pretty simple. How many of you have actually done a background check on your accountant? I haven't. I have the best accountant in Oregon. And if you do, it's the same process as we have right now. You pick up, it's real complicated, you pick up a phone, you call the state where they're certified, and you check them out. Whether they're from Iowa, that bastion of wild living, or the great state of Oregon. It's real simple. There's all kinds of accountability. There's a national test. All kinds of national associations relating to accountancy support this. Boards in this state have been radically, wildly wrong on countless issues, and I've stood and spoke to them right here. All of a sudden, this wild bunch of CPAs is going to run roughshod over this state as they are 43 other states in the United States of America. Unbelievable to think that that's true. So I guess I've said enough, and I cussed while I was at it, and I apologize to the body and the state of Oregon for that. It's a good bill. Should pass. Urge your vote.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Thatcher, do you wish to close?
Yes, I do. First of all, I just want to clarify, this is not a reciprocity bill. This is a practice privilege bill. And just to name a couple of other occupations that have this same mobility standard as we're seeking here, licensed massage therapists, certain classifications of them, and some occupational therapists have this ability to practice in other states. Now, there is a lot of concern about the lack of accountability, that this would be, that we would have no record of who's practicing in the state. Keep in mind the standards are the same, virtually the same, from state to state. Bad actors based here in Oregon and practicing in Oregon have to go through the same annual relicensing exercise as any potentially bad actor from any other state. And if they go through the relicensing standards and, don't meet the continuing education requirements and, the continuing ethics and rules reviews that they get, they are not relicensed. And just like maybe hospital privileges for doctors, any hospital can revoke a physician's privilege. And so, too, for CPAs in this case, Oregon can revoke privileges of out-of-state CPAs if they violate the rules. In fact, in Section 3.3, I wished I had had a heads up on the question. I could have given a little better answer. But it does indicate that by practicing their trade in this state, they are agreeing, by default, they are agreeing to comply with all the requirements, the same requirements that CPAs in this state would have to abide by. It says that if the license, well, and they would also be subject to the same penalties as well. And if they are caught practicing after their privileges are removed, they would face the same stiff penalties of any other CPA registered to do business here in the state of Oregon. They would be facing the same penalties. I think the good representative from Gresham stated it well. This is a good bill. It did pass the Senate, 29-1 being excused. And just to point out again that the language in this bill is supported by the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy. 43 other states have passed this. There have been no documented lapses in public protection in the other states which have adopted this. It does strike a good balance. It is pro-business, and I urge your aye vote.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Freeman, how do you vote? Freeman votes aye. Representative Widener, how do you vote? Widener votes no. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes no. Representative Schaffler, for what purpose are you in the queue?
I would like to give notification for possible reconsideration when we have the other
do you,
10.
Representative Schaffler, did you want to change your vote first?
Yes, I do, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Schaffler would like to change his vote from?
From yea to nay.
Aye to nay, and now proceed.
And I would like to serve notice of possible reconsideration when we get the other 10 members on the floor.
Representative Schaffler serves notice of possible reconsideration. Representative Widener, for what purpose are you in the queue?
I'd like to change my vote from nay to aye.
Well, then, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Widener changes his vote from nay to aye. Representative Schaffler, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, I changed my vote from nay to yay.
Representative Schaffler.
And withdraw my notification.
We have not... Gavel, Representative Holby, Representative Holby, I'll get to you in a moment. We are still, the bill has not gaveled down. Anyone may still change their vote. Representative Holby, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Just a point of order, Mr. Chair, from changing the vote, changing their votes would change the outcome of the vote.
Yeah, and that actually is anytime we're in suspension, under suspension of the rules after we've gaveled out. If a vote would change the outcome at that point, no one may change their vote. When the caucus leaders at that point request unanimous consent to suspend the rules, that is not allowed. Within the 30 seconds, within the time before the bill is gaveled, folks are able to change their vote either way. Anyone else? Senate Bill 867, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read, the chair requests unanimous consent that Senate Bill 428 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Thursday, June 4th, 2009's calendar. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 112, relating to reemployment of retired members of public employees' retirement systems and declaring an emergency.
So you notice we've skipped back down to Senate Bill 112, which is where we left off before lunch. The question arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 112A. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 112B addresses the inconsistent issues regarding retired PERS members who return to public employment. PERS statutes contain varying restrictions and consequences for a Tier 1 or Tier 2 retired member who returns to work for a public employer. The consequences depend upon whether the member was retired for more or less than 6 months before returning to public employment. And depending upon the retiree's circumstances, benefits may need to be repaid to PERS. While the statute provides an exception to repayment in several respects, such as retirees who work less than 1,040 hours in a calendar year, the exception only applies to those who receive a monthly benefit. Retired employees who choose or are forced to receive a total lump sum payment do not fall under this exception, which has resulted in numerous members incurring unexpected repayment obligations and other complications such as tax problems. Senate Bill 112B extends the exception to retired members who elect the total lump sum option, creating uniform standards for retired members. Senate Bill 112B also establishes that hours worked by a retired member in the exempt position does not count toward the 1,040-hour limitation, regardless of whether the retiree is also employed by a non-exempt position in the same calendar year. This portion of the measure is retroactive, applicable to all hours of the retired member's employment on or after January 1, 2004. The bill had no opposition and passed unanimously out of the Business and Labor Committee. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Esquivel, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Voted. Senate Bill 112A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 170, relating to rural airports.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 170B. Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, 170 defines through the fence. Not over the fence or under the fence, but through the fence. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gilman, would you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, for what purpose are you in the queue? Oh, you're voting aye. Representative Clem votes aye. Representative Buckley, how do you vote? Buckley votes aye. Senate Bill 170B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 444, relating to hazing.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 444A. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm still reeling from the fence analogy. Colleagues, I bring you Senate Bill 444 from your Education Committee with a unanimous do-pass recommendation. This is about hazing. Currently, hazing laws only pertain... Catch this. Currently, hazing laws only pertain to college campuses and do not include athletic teams. This bill expands to include all schools. That includes elementary schools, secondary schools, high schools, and college campuses. And that all activities, including athletic teams, would be included in this. This would include all student organizations. And I'm going to read for you the definition of a student organization. Student organization means a fraternity, sorority, athletic team, or other organization that is organized or operating on a college, university, elementary, or secondary school campus for the purpose of providing members an opportunity to participate in student activities of the college or the school of their choice. And let me describe for you what hazing is. I've already received some conversation and concern that this attacks maybe some of those deep-held traditions in organizations. Let me talk to you about what this bill calls hazing. Hazing is to subject an individual to whipping, beating, striking, branding, or electronic shocking to place a harmful substance on an individual's body or to subject an individual to other similar forms of physical brutality. To subject an individual to sleep deprivation, exposure to the elements, confinement in a small space or other similar activities that subjects the individual, again, to an unreasonable risk of harm or adversely affects the physical health or safety of the individual. Further, to compel an individual to consume food, liquid, alcohol, controlled substances, or other substances that subject the individual to an unreasonable risk of harm or adversely affect the physical health or safety of the individual. Colleagues, this bill isn't about what has been referred to as a rite of passage. This is about events that go too far. And as I looked at this bill, I thought about my son coming home from school, middle school at this point, high school or college, and explaining to me maybe an event that occurred as he's new on a particular team. And I got to tell you, if he was beaten or branded or consumed alcohol to the point he passed out, and yes, occasionally they die, that's not appropriate. That's not a rite of passage. And that's not what this bill is about. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Springer, do you wish to close? She does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bruin, how do you vote? Representative Bruin, how do you vote? Representative Bruin, off the floor. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Representative Wisnett? Off the floor. Representative Gilman, how do you vote? Off the floor. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Freeman?
Representative Freeman, how do you vote? Off the floor. Representative Gilliam, he's a no, isn't he? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I change my vote to yay, please?
Representative Gilliam votes aye. Representative Widener.
Mr. Speaker, may I change my vote from no to aye?
Representative Widener changes his vote to aye. Senate Bill 444A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 515, relating to warranties on motor vehicles and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 515B. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 515B is brought to you with a unanimous due pass recommendation from our Consumer Protection Committee under the fine leadership of my friend from the Emerald Empire. Yes, sir. Now, you may ask, why are we bringing a bill forward to talk about on the floor with a unanimous recommendation? And the reality is, because it's dealing with the automobile industry. It's dealing with the Lemon Law. And it could be a pretty big deal given today's economic times. But what we're trying to do is also strengthen our consumer protection laws and give customers confidence to go back out there into the dealerships. Rather than read you the measure summary, I'd like to just talk about a few things. First of all, this came out of the Senate. Senator Bonamici had a very extensive work group with all stakeholders that resulted in a compromise that would strengthen our Oregon Lemon Law, which, by the way, Oregon's Lemon Law is one of the weakest in the nation. We're going to hopefully change that today. Significant change within this bill would include that the current law is 12 months or 12,000 miles on the Lemon Law. This bill would create 24 months or 24,000 miles, so it would double. It would also decrease the number of times that a car could be brought in for the same substantial problem. Currently, that's four times that a consumer can bring the car back for the same substantial problem. The bill would go to three times. It would clarify the formula used to calculate the value of the consumer's use of the car prior to being returned. Currently, those cases go into litigation. This would clarify that formula. Again, a step in the right direction, and with stakeholders involved, reach compromise. Most important is probably the disclosure for resale. The current law, believe it or not, does not require full disclosure when a car is returned as a lemon and then resold. This bill would require, however, that the words Lemon Law Buyback are printed on the title of every vehicle upon resale. This, again, supported by all stakeholders. Worth noting would be the fact that we amended the motorhomes clause. Motorhomes, living facility components are not covered under the law or under the bill. And it would allow one additional opportunity for a manufacturer to correct the motorhome nonconformity following three attempts by the dealer. So again, motorhomes raise significant concerns that the manufacturer be given an opportunity, and that amendment was brought forward as well. Lastly, it would specify that non-dealer installed aftermarket additions may constitute an affirmative defense in cases where they are determined to have caused nonconformity. So if somebody's modifying the exhaust system, and they have a problem within the electrical system, obviously that probably wouldn't be, you know, paralleled or drawn conclusions. However, if there's a problem with the emission system and they've converted that through a non-manufactured, non-dealer installed, then it wouldn't be part of the Lemon Law and they would have to suffer as a consumer. The bottom line on the bill is currently Lemon and consumer needs, they resort to litigation. This bill would restrict an award of attorney fees to the manufacturer to situations where consumers have brought the case in bad faith or for harassment. So there again, it's a protection for our dealership. And then let's emphasize that liability in Lemon Law cases rests with the manufacturers, not with our local area car dealers. The only possible dealer liability under this bill would be if the dealer willfully resold a lemon knowingly without disclosing the branded title. Again, this was a group discussion, many meetings with stakeholders, several amendments. I believe we got to dash 13. I understand the angst when we're talking about car dealerships. We all know the economy right now. We want our citizens going out and buying cars with confidence. We want our dealers to be successful. I can tell you in Gresham alone, Gresham Chrysler, Betty Parker and her husband, longtime family business, is closed. Murray Chevrolet considering closing. Best Wills, Bob Avila, owners of Gresham Ford, they're struggling. Great folks that deserve supportive business. Their groups have come forward to be part of this bill. We brought to you Senate Bill 515B, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Matthews, would you like to close?
Mr. Speaker, yes. Senate Bill 515B really addresses the bad actors. Whoopsie-daisy, I didn't mean to say bad actors on your behalf. This is about protecting our consumers. It also will protect our dealerships. And quite honestly, it strengthens the lemon law, which is much needed in the state of Oregon. Thank you, and I urge your aye vote.
Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Boone, how do you vote? Boone votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. Representative Call, how do you vote? Representative Call votes aye. Senate Bill 515B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Chair requests unanimous consent that Senate Bill 580 be taken from today's calendar and placed in its proper place on Thursday, June 4, 2009 calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Chair requests unanimous consent that Senate Bill 640 be placed at the bottom of today's calendar. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 679, related to health benefit plan dividends paid for healthy lifestyles.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 679A. Representative Olson. Yikes. Representative Bruin, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Earlier today, the good Representative Olson asked, I was originally assigned to carry this. I'm sorry, go ahead. You want me to keep going? I was originally assigned to carry this. Representative Olson wanted to carry it. It's his bill. We talked to the clerk. We changed that. I'm happy to carry it now, or we can carry it over. Oh, there it is. I'm sorry. Just buying time for the good representative.
Thank you very much for that very, very, very good request, and we appreciate that entirely. And so now, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and colleagues. And Representative Bruin, thank you. Senate Bill 679 is a simple bill, yet possesses profound positive impacts on health care costs. Dr. Jack Lees from Albany is the brainchild of this bill, and Senator Frank Morris and I were fortunate enough to be asked by Dr. Lees to sponsor this bill. The bill simply states that insurers offering a health benefit plan may pay cash dividends to employees in the plans who participate in programs approved by the insurer that promote healthy behaviors. The concept of Senate Bill 679 anticipates, though does not direct, that insurance companies will develop collaborative efforts with community-based programs that focus on tobacco cessation, obesity, fitness, and nutrition. We have all heard the statistics. Tobacco use costs Oregonians more than $2 million per year. It is responsible for 430,000 deaths annually in the United States, and it is projected that approximately 5 million children living in the United States will die prematurely due to tobacco use. Currently, General Electric is paying $750 to tobacco users who successfully complete a smoking cessation program and expects to recoup the cost of the program in 3 to 5 years. It can be argued that obesity is Oregon's number one health care challenge. Obesity-related health problems cost Oregonians more than $781 million a year. And further, it is estimated that 1,400 deaths each year in Oregon are associated with obesity. We all know the values of fitness. A daily hour of moderate exercise can lower your risk of diabetes by nearly 50%. Regular exercise reduces blood pressure by an average of 7 to 10 points. And I can go on giving you further examples of what fitness and exercise can do for you. What this bill will do is open the door for insurance companies to offer competitive products that create incentives for Oregonians to change their lifestyles in ways that result in better health, that in turn result to lower health care costs. I know in my community there are many ways for insurance companies to engage community-based wellness programs through the YMCA, health clubs, churches, and employers. The writer of an article entitled Coverage in the March-April 2009 issue of American Health Insurance Plan magazine wrote, quote, "A consensus is emerging that for wellness programs to be effective, they must be incorporated into people's daily lives. To help people make good health a priority as they go about daily living, health plans are forming partnerships with employers, physicians, schools, and communities to offer wellness programs that support healthy behaviors in a range of environments. Senate Bill 679 gives a strong nudge and incentive for insurance companies to be creative in promoting healthy lifestyles. It is truly a win-win bill. I urge you to strongly consider moving this, supporting this bill with an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Garrard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Smokers Caucus endorses this bill and urges a yes vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Olson, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Representative Barker. Representative Barker. Off the floor. Senate Bill 679A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 731, relating to garnishment.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 731B. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today to urge your support of Senate Bill 731B, which will ensure important protection from garnishment for the public benefits of veterans, seniors, and people with disabilities. The bill comes to you from the Consumer Protection Committee with a unanimous... Is that right? Unbelievable. A unanimous due pass recommendation. Oregon's current garnishment laws do not work to protect public benefits. The purpose of public benefits is to create a safety net for vulnerable people to meet their most basic needs in times of economic difficulty. The safety net benefits are exempt from collection as a matter of state and federal law. But regularly in Oregon, the exempt benefits of vulnerable citizens are being garnished inappropriately from bank accounts. The only way to challenge this is through a court hearing, which can take weeks or months, leaving the person without the means to pay rent or buy food or medicine. Senate Bill 731B protects benefits in a bank account from garnishment. Here's how it works. When a person receives a direct deposit of exempt funds, an amount equal to the amount of the deposit will be protected from garnishment in that account. The protection applies in two circumstances: when the benefits are identified by an affidavit on file, or when the benefits can be identified from information sent by the payor. The protection applies to direct deposits of retirement plans, payments, Social Security, veteran benefits, public assistance, unemployment compensation, black lung benefits, and workers' compensation. The bill is fair to financial institutions. The proposal is simple for banks to administer, and there is a complete release of liability for good faith application of the law. Financial institutions may charge an increased fee for garnishment processing. Creditors are not entitled to exempt funds anyway, as per state and federal law. Most important, it's protective of the exempt funds are vulnerable citizens, veterans, seniors, and people with disabilities. I would draw your attention, I think they were yesterday and probably not today, of letter support from the Oregon War Veterans Association, who testified in front of our committee in support of this, the Oregon Law Center, Lane County Legal Aid and Advocacy Center, as well as from AARP, Disability Rights Oregon, and the AFL-CIO. A great thanks to the Credit Union Association for staying at the table and trying to make this work for them as well, and working with us to make this a bill that the entire committee could support. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holford, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Comp, how do you vote?
Aye.
Comp votes aye. Representative Garrard, how do you vote? Garrard votes aye. Representative Van Orman votes aye. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Representative Reed votes aye. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Representative Cannon votes aye. Senate Bill 731B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 862, relating to a reimbursement of health care costs and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 862B. Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Oregon continues to see a rise in the number of uninsured. Local communities are taking proactive steps to reduce the uninsured, enhanced implementation of community health improvement programs. These community-based programs provide access to health care services through innovative and strategic partnerships, and through contributions from the employer, employee, and community. Senate Bill 862A requires the Office of Health Policy and Research to adopt rules for the approval of a community-based health care initiative. And folks, I'm going to read parts of a letter written by Dr. Mike Bonetto, PhD, who is the chairman of Health Matters of Central Oregon, which is a group of people that are trying to address this problem. We are asking for the passage of Senate Bill 862 in order to allow us to adapt a nationally recognized and acclaimed multi-share access model that has assisted communities in improving health care availability, access, reimbursement, and health status. The multi-share model originated in Muskegon County, Michigan, and is being replicated in dozens of communities across the country. The multi-share program is tailored to assist small employers, low-income uninsured employees, and their families who cannot afford commercial insurance or do not qualify for the Oregon Health Plan or Family Health Insurance Assistance Program. In order to keep dues affordable for each of the multiple parties, the services offered are less comprehensive than a traditional insurance product. This also guards against crowd-out, when employers drop their coverage to take advantage of programs that require lower contributions from them. This is truly a community-owned process. Services are delivered by the community, and the services are determined through focus groups. Small employers and uninsured identify prioritize health care services, and they to include reductions in emergency room visits, mental health services, prescription drugs, dental and preventive and wellness care. And this is his quote: "We obviously think this is a very important bill, but certainly don't deceive ourselves into thinking that this is a silver bullet. We do, however, believe that this is an essential bridge to connect the uninsured to needed services that don't exist today and don't require additional state funds. I urge your support of Senate Bill 862B.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Maurer, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Representative Shields votes aye. Senate Bill 862B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 863, relating to reimbursement of local filmmaker productions.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 863. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm happy to bring to you Senate Bill 863, and I'm particularly pleased that the sponsor, Senator Telfer, could be in the chamber, or at least right above us at this time. Mr. Speaker, in these economic times, we need to create real jobs right now in the private sector on Main Street with people that have skills and experience and are ready to go to work, and in this case, ready to go to work with money from out of state. That's in large part what this bill is about. It's small, but on a very effective scale, it does this. Some people ask, well, okay, why this industry? And the answer is this. This industry is not any more worthy of this kind of assistance than another. Any group of Oregonians that are hardworking deserve this kind of assistance. But you have to ask yourself, does anybody jump up to go see a crew pour some concrete, with the exception of the representative from Happy Valley? People will go across the street and across the state to see a film or a TV series film. It's a proven multiplier, and there's a record in the Economic Development Department, or as we call it now, the Community and Development Economic Development Community Fund, that says 5% will go to local filmmakers to grow this industry, to grow this profession. There are actors and directors and, yes, some out-of-state producer types that spend money here on local projects or so-called big-time Hollywood projects. But there are in-state techs, carpenters, dolly grips, writers, makeup artists, and caterers that are Oregonians. Now, colleagues, in Hollywood, there's a big deal made about product placement. It's become a genre unto itself. Angelina Jolie doesn't just use a tissue. She goes and pulls one out of a Kleenex box. And companies pay big for that kind of product placement. To me, this bill represents the ultimate product placement, and the product is our state. America is watching. So they see Oregon in every scene or every landscape, or they see Oregon when the credits roll, whether it's a video, TV, a movie, or an independent film. Colleagues, I want you to remember that I'm bringing you the first part of a 1-2 punch. 863 particularly addresses the independent film community, the local film community, strengthening the professionalism in Oregon. There's another bill coming, and I hope you'll pay attention to it, too, because they work together, and it's important that we pass both of them. That second bill will be 621. Colleagues, this is a good bill that creates jobs and is a proven way to put people to work in an industry that's ready to go and that promotes other kinds of industries in Oregon, not just film and video. Mr. Speaker, I should also raise a possible conflict, if this is the time to do it.
State your conflict.
Mr. Speaker, could I have quiet in the room, please?
Could we have quiet, please? Thank you.
That's better. Could we ask Representative Barker to be removed from the chamber? Some say that I should declare a conflict of interest. After all, It is rumored that we're going to shoot the trilogy, The Man from Happy Valley, here in Oregon, and I understand that that's true. And yes, I am up for the role for the second movie, Schaffler, The Shy Years. But, Mr. Speaker...
Out of time.
When I...
So noted for the record.
Pardon?
Oh, yeah.
There's no time limit on a conflict. And I remember when I first went in a play in high school. So, anyway, it's usually between me and the guy that gets the job anyway. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
So noted for the record. Further discussion. Representative Thatcher.
Yeah, I was a no in committee. This is to the bill. He's not paying attention. Anyhow, yes, I was a no in committee, and this is no offense to the local filmmakers or to Hollywood or, you know, heaven forbid. But, and I understand that this bill does not expand the Oregon Production Investment Fund. There will be a bill later that was alluded to in the previous speaker's, what he was saying. And that includes a 50% increase in funding for this program, increasing it from $10 million to $15 million. Now, I appreciate that this bill does something for our local people. It sets aside a percentage of that fund. Here's what the summary says. Here's what the bill says it's going to. Here's what it says it's going to do. It says authorizes Economic and Community Development Department to reimburse local filmmaker for all or portion of expenses paid in Oregon to produce smaller films using Oregon residents for production. But just for a minute, just substitute the word filmmakers with any other occupation or business, bricklayer, plumber, electrician, grocer, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, whatever. You get the point. Just substitute the word. Why are they not singled out for such a reimbursement? I'm speaking to a bigger issue. Rather than the state choosing what we deem to be worthy occupations or businesses, worthy of special treatment from the state, why don't we extend this to every Oregon business? We're told that this program has a huge multiplier effect in the community. Now, if it has such a positive economic development or economic impact to our state, my question to you is, if it's good for the filmmakers, why wouldn't it be good for everyone else? Why don't we do this bill for filmmakers or extend it to all businesses in Oregon, which would be to authorize the Economic and Community Development Department to reimburse local businesses for all or portion of their expenses paid in Oregon to produce their product or service, or even better, cut out the middleman, the bureaucracy called the Economic and Community Development Department, and cut to the chase. Why don't we lower the cost of doing business for all businesses in Oregon by reducing their tax burden? We could reduce the amount of taxes businesses pay up and individuals pay up front instead of reimbursing folks at the back end after having run the money through a bureaucracy. I guess I'm just having a hard time this session with some of these bills, picking winners and losers, deciding who's a favorite, who's most worthy to do business in Oregon. Because it would seem that the ones not lucky enough to score a bill in their favor are not worthy enough. If the state is going to be continuing down the road of being the business of deciding who wins and who loses in the private sector, then let's at least take a close look at this program and see if it's using our tax dollars well compared to other programs that we set. Where subsidies are involved. For example, in Wisconsin, they did a comparative analysis of their film incentives versus other economic development programs, and they found that the film tax breaks were 75% less effective than the next least effective state program in creating jobs. Yeah, we need to create jobs. We also need to fund our priorities, and right now our core functions of state government, public safety, education, and social services are screaming for help. That's where we should be spending our tax dollars, instead of on subsidizing winners. After funding our core functions, and after we've put our money where it's best spent. Instead of just helping one industry, maybe we should consider an equal opportunity benefit for all businesses in Oregon and individuals by lowering their costs of doing and working in the state, doing business and working in the state through lower taxes. What's good for the film goose is good for the rest of the Oregon ganders. Let's stop picking winners and losers.
Further discussion, Representative Dave Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Out of an abundance of caution, I'd like to declare a conflict of interest.
State the conflict.
I've worked in the film industry in the past and may do so in the future in a capacity that would benefit from this bill.
So noted for the record. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
A while back, my good friend from the Christmas Tree District and I, we merged our districts, so we co-represent two districts. And this is part of our Oregon First agenda that includes farm-to-school, preferential ag purchasing on products that already passed this thing. I was going to ask a question of the carrier co-representative with me, but I don't want to give him any more time than he's already going to get. So let me just rhetorically ask. There is currently running in Dennis' office all over Oregon this little talkie, I think they call it, and there's an actor in there, and he keeps talking about some dental product. And as I sit there, I keep seeing him, much like I'm seeing him right now. And I'm just wondering if there is going to be an opportunity for that little bit part to make its way onto the golden screen at some point in a dentist's office or silver screen near me. It's a good bill. It should pass.
Further discussion, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I just wanted to chime in on this a little bit. I sat on economic development for two terms, and this is a bill, you know, that came up both times, and I've been supportive of this bill both times. And the reason is not only does it create jobs and actually multiply those jobs, but it does more. What it does is it promotes tourism in our state. One of the biggest industries we have, tourism. And when people see Oregon in the movies, they're enchanted, just like we all are with Oregon. And they come here and they spend their money. The only thing that concerns me is that the good representative said this would promote professionalism, and then he declared a conflict. And I don't understand that. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Wingard.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Will the carrier yield?
Certainly, Mr. Speaker.
He will.
Representative, did I hear you characterize an acting job in a film as a real job?
I didn't understand the question.
Could you rephrase the question?
I think everybody
clarification.
To the
clarification.
Bill.
No. To the bill.
To the bill. Colleagues, I just want to echo this point. I actually agree with the good representative from Kaiser-Newburgh that as jobs bills go, economic development bills go, this is no better than picking any other industry, and I don't think that's a good argument for the bill. But the argument made from the good representative from over in the Hillsborough area is much more valid. When movies are made, there's a tremendous amount of money spent marketing them to the tune oftentimes of tens of millions of dollars, and they travel. Those bills tend to go and play all over the world. And so I cannot think of anything that we would do that would promote tourism in Oregon better than to promote the film industry to film its television and movie products within the boundaries of the state of Oregon. This is a multi-billion dollar industry, and it is an extremely powerful medium. And to the extent that Oregon and its different locations are highlighted, that has a tremendously positive effect on tourism in this state. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I would like to advise all of you that I have started a victim support group for our dear representative from the Christmas Tree Valley District. However, I'm rising to support this bill because one of the things I do is I get my view of the world oftentimes by watching movies. And one of my favorite memories is My Friend Flicka that was filmed over in the Metolius with the sisters in the background. That has been marked indelibly on my mind. But recently there was a film called Broken Trail, and it was about a couple of rough and ready guys who were taking horses over to Wyoming. And it was in John Day, and it mentioned the Dalles, although they couldn't correct it, they couldn't pronounce it correctly. But it was beautiful, and it really made me think that we were in John Day, and then at the end it says it was made in Canada. So I think it's time for us to have some credit for the beauty of our state and not Canada.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gilliam, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I appreciate most of the comments made by my colleagues to the representative from my co-district some night when your daughter... Oh, he left. When his daughter is not sleeping, I'll bring my reel over. To the representative from Kaiser Neuburg St. Paul, I appreciate your comments and agree with much of what is behind them, but respectfully disagree that this may be an exception because of the potential. And to the other representatives, thanks so much. Colleagues, we're in the middle of a record year of film production in this state. In fact, if film production stopped today, it would still be the best year that we've had in 15 years. So we've had productions in 09, in Portland, that's just north of here, Eugene, Bandon, and soon in Manzanita. So my closing statement is this, also in Bend, I should also throw in there. This business is a clean business, Mr. Speaker. It's a good business. And there's no indication of it slowing down even in a recession, which is, I believe, why it justifies this kind of small investment through this fund at the Economic Development Department. And seriously, Mr. Speaker, it's hard to believe, but I really do have a SAG card, and there is a potential conflict, and I wish it was noted for the record. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
So noted for the record. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen. Jensen votes aye. The paper was getting in the way. It was really difficult to see the thumb. Thank you. Representative Jensen. Ready? Senate Bill 863, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 942, relating to the Oregon Climate Corps and appropriating money.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 942B. Representative Jefferson Smith.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, sets forth the University of Oregon and OSU extension programs to implement the Oregon Climate Corps to train corps of volunteers for Oregon residents, businesses, and other entities. Thanks to Coos Bay native Teddy Kaiser and Senator Verger for their leadership. Unanimous, out of Environment and Water, vote aye. I apologize for my great length.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Smith, do you wish to close? Representative Smith, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed? Vote no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Representative Shields. Representative Shields, off the floor. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Senate Bill 942B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill. We will stand at ease. We are away. The next bill.
Senate Bill 16, relating to advance directives for health care and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 16B. Representative Greenleg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 16B is brought to you from the House Health Care Committee and the Senate Committee on Health Care, or Health Policy and Veteran Affairs. It turns out that in the current law, where individuals are able to assign somebody to be to make decisions for them, I can assign Harriet the power of attorney, the health care power of attorney, to make decisions for me. That authority doesn't relate to mental health, it turns out, and it doesn't relate to admissions to a psychiatric unit. And this bill was brought to us because there were problems of folks with dementia and behavioral problems related to dementia that needed to be admitted to a psychiatric hospital for a short period, and when their spouse, in this case, who had the health care power of attorney, tried to authorize that admission, it turned out that because of a quirk in the law, that's not possible. And the spouse was told they had to go through a guardianship procedure in order to get that authority. We're going to try and work on that whole process in the interim to see whether we can straighten that out, because I know when I thought I've given somebody a power of attorney to make important health care decisions, they can make those decisions. But in the meantime, we put a fix on it that allows an existing health care power of attorney or an advance directive to be used in the case of admission to a mental hospital for dementia with behavioral components to allow a stay up to 18 days on behalf of that person. It's a short-term fix, but it's an important problem, and I urge a yes vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Greenleg, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Widener, how do you vote? Widener votes aye. Representative Wingard votes aye. Representative Greg Smith votes aye. Senate Bill 16B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 64, relating to school finance and declaring an emergency.
Representative Gelser. Oh. Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 1664A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move Senate Bill 64 be referred to the Committee on Revenue.
Representative Gelser moves Senate Bill 64 be referred to the Committee on Revenue. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. After passing this bill out of our committee, we recognized that it had a subsequent referral to revenue, so we would like it to visit there.
Further discussion? Seeing none. Representative Gelser, do you wish to close?
No.
She does not. Those of the opinion that Senate Bill 64 should be referred to the Committee on Revenue will vote aye. Will say aye. Say aye. Say that again. Will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. Having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Senate Bill 64 is referred to the Committee on Revenue. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 118, relating to delegation of authority within Oregon university system.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 118B. Representative Harker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 118B grants the State Board of Higher Ed the authority to delegate any of its powers to a committee of the board, with the notable exceptions of the power to prescribe enrollment fees and the power to adopt rules. The bill comes to us from the House Education Committee, where it passed with a unanimous vote. Senate Bill 118 is much narrower in scope than when it first came to us from the Senate. The adjustment is thanks to some very productive negotiation between the board, the chancellor, and concerned parties on campuses across the state. The result is a bill that will enable the board to conduct its work more efficiently, and frankly, given the budgetary cuts we're imposing on higher ed, we owe them at least that much. Please join me in supporting this bill with an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Harker, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion that the... Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Votes aye. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Representative Greg Smith? Is he back in the phone booth? Representative Greg Smith? Votes aye. Representative Reed votes aye. Senate Bill 118B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 174, relating to State Board of Psychologist Examiners.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 118B, 174A. Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, Senate Bill 174A comes to you from your Committee on Health Care. And it has to do principally with the raising of civil penalties for licensed psychologists, something that has not been done for a long time and was appropriate to move up. There was some controversy about this for a while, and I was put in charge of a small subcommittee which made a recommendation back. We have raised civil penalties to from $1,000 to $5,000 in some circumstances and to as much as $10,000 in more extenuating circumstances. Also, we added an amendment asked for by Senator Whitsitt. There is an anomaly in our state where psychologists who are providing services
in municipal and state facilities do not necessarily have to be licensed. Both the Association of Community Mental Health Centers and DHS agreed that this was an obsolete provision and inconsistent with licensing done elsewhere. This is a good bill. I recommend its support. And, Mr. Speaker, I'd also like to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your conflict.
My conflict is I am licensed under the Board of Psychologists Examiners, and in the event of a civil penalty, I could be assessed that amount.
So noted for the record. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kenemer, would you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Clem, how do you vote? Aye. Representative Clem, okay. Senate Bill 174A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 299, relating to possession of domestic animals.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 299A. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 299A passed unanimously out of the House Judiciary Committee. It allows the court to remove all domestic animals from residence of a person who has been convicted of unlawfully possessing domestic animals. It adds sexual assault and animal fighting offenses to the offenses that bar possession of domestic animals for 5 years after conviction. It adds dogfighting and cockfighting into offenses that bar possession of domestic animal for 15 years after conviction. And it designates unlawful possession of a Class C misdemeanor. It's a good bill, Mr. Speaker. It should pass. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shields, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cannon, how do you vote?
Aye.
Cannon votes aye. Representative Olson, how do you vote? Representative Olson votes aye. Representative Thompson, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Senate Bill 299A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 409, relating to blackberries and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 409A. Representative Winger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, Senate Bill 409A would create an Oregon Blackberry Cooperative in the state, would allow them to form that cooperative. Now, primary purpose of the legislation is to allow the interested parties, the blackberry growers, to meet together in a price discovery negotiation process with protection from the state and federal antitrust laws. It will enable the sharing of pertinent information on production, inventory, and markets in a private, confidential forum and allow all parties a voice in developing a reasonable price that reflects all available information. And it creates the opportunity to discuss collaborative efforts on industry-coordinated initiatives that may benefit pricing options and ultimately, hopefully, will help stabilize the price for Oregon's blackberry growers in the state. And somewhere here, I had a significant line about Oregon's. Oregon is the nation's leading producer of commercially grown blackberries. I just wanted to get that in. It's a good bill, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Anytime we attempt to jigger a market by saying we can't have open and free competition should raise a red flag. But there is a thing called the state action doctrine, and I'm not a lawyer, but this body kind of throws you into that realm, and so you have to read that way. And so for a state action doctrine, there's really two tests that must be articulated for it to be legal, because we can't exempt ourselves from federal antitrust law unless we abide by several criteria. Number one is that you have clearly articulated and affirmatively expressed a state policy. It's number one. I look at Senate Bill 409 and clearly think that, in fact, it is an express policy of the state. So it's passed number one. Number two is that the area is subject to active state supervision. Now, folks, we're talking about blackberries here. We're not talking about health care, but we're talking about blackberries. It seems like a pretty simple area of agriculture. It's a limited growth area. But it takes about one page of the ORS to deal with state supervision of antitrust for a commodity of blackberries. I asked a question, well, what else do we allow antitrust exemptions in the state for? And we have laws that exempt grass seed producers, seafood sales, some political subdivisions in the state may exempt taxi cabs and limousines. OHSU has granted some exemptions. Quite honestly, I haven't had time to go and look exactly what that means for them. Trash collectors, forestry seedling industry, the Memorial Coliseum and Arena in Portland. And that's about it. The point is, you have to have state control, state supervision of all antitrust laws or antitrust collusion. Because the law says, it says we're going to exempt them for activities that restrain trade, could be considered a conspiracy, or unlawful activity. Folks, this is pretty detailed for blackberries. I just hope you remember that detail, and I would urge your support on Senate Bill 409.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Werner, do you wish to close?
Briefly, Mr. Speaker. We do have some other agricultural products that we do this cooperative with, ryegrass, fescue, and it's not exactly an agricultural product, but crabs and just a few other commodity markets. When it comes to small agricultural producers, a cooperative like this, I'll give you an example. Up in Washington State, the apple growers, a lot of them belong to a cooperative called Treetop that makes the Treetop apple juice, and that's where they're able to sell off the apples that aren't really good enough for the fresh market, and they end up in the apple juice, and that allows them to get a reasonable rate of return on those apples that otherwise probably wouldn't be turned into anything at all. So I encourage your aye vote.
Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. All have voted. Senate Bill 409A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 556, relating to automated external defibrillators.
The question now arises upon third reading and final approval of Senate Bill 556A. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is a bill that comes to you from your House Veterans and Emergency Services Committee, and it's a life-saving bill. It requires certain places of public assembly, which are defined as a facility of 50,000 square feet or more, and where at least 25 individuals congregate on a normal business day. This is not a part-time thing. This is where you go to work, where you go, like here. And that they require to have an automatic external defibrillator. These are the little machines that you hook up to people who've had a medical event. They've gone down quickly, their heart stops, and these are simple. These are the new ones where it tells you what to do. You push a button, it tells you whether to shock or not, and you can't make a mistake. They save lives. They respond immediately if you have something within a short distance that you can grab. We've got them all over the floors here in the building. These will save lives. And I wanted to address I may have a question. Am I getting a question? I'll get a question here. I'll let that happen when it does. But I wanted to address something else, and that is that when we've had these events here in the building, and I know everybody's heard of something. Somebody goes down in a bus or in the airport or whatever, and these places all have them. County fairgrounds, the offices have them. Public places have them. They do not. This bill does not require, though, the school districts, educational service district, private school, or public charter school, and they don't require them in a private home, of course. It was discussed in committee we'd like to see those additional facilities added in the future because, as we all know, if you've got one on hand and you need it, boy, is it a lifesaver. So please support this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Will the carrier yield? She does.
Thank you, Representative. In committee, I had asked a question about what facilities mean. It didn't say 50,000 square foot building. It says facilities. And would you know if that would include the parking lot of a facility, or is it just the building?
It's my understanding it's the building. It's the structure. It's within a building where a day-to-day business or whatever happens.
Thank you. To the bill?
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In committee, I voted no on this, and it was specifically because there was no clear understanding of what facility means. One could argue that a truck stop that has a large footprint in a small building, the entire truck stop is a facility. One could easily argue that a business that has a large parking lot, that parking lot is part of the facility. The definition just is not clear on this. The other part that I was a little bit unsure of, and what they explained to us was a cost thing, is why schools were not included. I would tell you that high school gyms and schools, a lot of them already have that, but it should be required. I think there's a lot of situations where there could be life saved at schools. And the other thing I did, and I didn't mean to make it completely funny, but in committee I declared a conflict because I am overweight. I do have high blood pressure. I have a history of heart attacks in my family. All that being said, I'm not sure it's our role to tell businesses to get in the life-saving business when we have EMTs and different already paid for people that do that. So I will continue to be a no vote. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Cameron.
Thank you. Question of the carrier, please.
Question of the carrier. Will the carrier yield? She does.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Representative. In committee, what was the reason we exempted public schools, which have hundreds and sometimes thousands of people in attendance at athletic events or even during the school day?
My committee administrator is not here. I think that, and I'll address it as best as I recall, and that is, and you're talking about a one-time thing, school fairs, et cetera, et cetera.
Clarification?
Yes. The bill says that it exempts schools, public, private, charter, from having to follow this law that we're passing here today, what was the reason we're exempting them in committee? What was discussed?
I don't recall the reason that was discussed, other than there was some talk about it would cost too much money. What was discussed, though, was the fact that these are life-saving devices, and school districts and hospitals and dorms and places like that, everybody decided that that should be in there. It was not in the bill, and we, in our committee, and this is a Senate bill, and when it came to our committee in the House, it was discussed that they should be. But I can't answer why it wasn't put in. But I think that our purpose was, we thought that it should be, and because of the time frame, at the point we heard this bill, we decided we needed to move it out because we were limited to when we could finish hearing these bills and wanted to move it out, with the discussion that it would be addressed in the future. Does that answer?
Thank you. To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Colleagues, who are we? What does this body do? We talk about ethics, what are we doing? We're supposed to set the example. We talk about safety, we're supposed to set the example. If the reason we exempted our public schools and our schools where hundreds and thousands of people gather is because it's too expensive, but yet we're going to mandate this on private business, where's the fiscal impact statement on that? If we truly believe in safety, why aren't we setting the example in our public schools? Why aren't we saying every high school gym should have one of these? Every community college campus should have one of these?
Further discussion, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I apologize. I was a little bit distracted, but to the bill.
To the bill.
Just a further explanation, because this particular bill was heard in the committee which I chair. The explanation of the carrier around school systems is that at this particular point in time, because of the fiscal impact, they didn't feel that they could mandate that particular item into this bill. However, I went back and reviewed the statute. There is nothing that prevents public schools from having these devices. Many do, and we have statutory language at this point in time that provides for their protection from liability, but a requirement for training around the use of the devices. So at this particular point in time, it is a choice as far as the public school system is concerned, and the drafter of this bill chose not to include that particular requirement in this specific piece of legislation.
Further discussion, Representative Wingert.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, not too long ago we had a discussion about carbon monoxide detector requirements in homes, and I pointed out that we voted to tax the people of Oregon to the tune of about $32 million on that requirement. It is difficult to determine how many buildings, commercial buildings or industrial buildings, would meet the 50,000 square foot requirement, but we can imagine it's tens of thousands. The defibrillator costs about $1,200, so we, for every 10,000 of these buildings that are out there, that's $12 million in a mandate you're layering on them. It's interesting that certain public bodies are exempted from that mandate, because I guess we consider it a financial hardship to require them to spend $1,200 on their properties, but we have absolutely no problem putting that on the private sector. We didn't offer a tax credit or anything to try to offset this public good that we're demanding that they spend money on. And it's amazing in this economic environment that we just keep doing this. I urge a no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
This bill, you know, we're talking about, what are we willing to do? Are we going to lead by example? Why can we do this to private, or why should private have to do this if public doesn't? Where's the leadership on this? You know, I'm going to go ahead and quote, this is prepared by Legislative Fiscal Office. I think we all have this. I'm going to go ahead and read it, just a portion of it in the analysis. The bill defines place of public assembly to be a facility that has 50,000 square feet or more of floor space where the public congregates for purposes such as deliberation, shopping, entertainment, amusement, or awaiting transportation, or where business activities are conducted, at least 25 individuals congregate on a normal business day. Here's the important part about the argument that I keep hearing about cost to private. State agencies with ownership of place of public assembly as defined by the bill include Oregon Military Department, Oregon Department of Transportation, Oregon Parks and Rec, Department of Administrative Services, OMD, and ODOT both report each agency has five facilities that would fall under the requirements of the bill. Oregon Parks and Rec believes the department would have to procure three AEDs for the state fairgrounds if this bill were to pass. Although no thorough inventory exists, many state agencies located in DAS-owned buildings already have AEDs in public settings as voluntary practice. If the bill were to pass, the fiscal impact on OMD, ODOT, Oregon Parks and Rec, and DAS would be minimal. The cost of an AED is roughly $1,200. We researched it online in committee while we were sitting there. Local government ownership of places of public assembly as defined by the bill would include city hall, libraries, venues used for special events. Facilities which currently do not have AEDs in public settings as voluntary practice would incur the cost of procuring the AED. The Oregon University system is not exempt from the provisions of the bill. However, the university system reports it already has AEDs in the facilities as would be defined by the bill. Here's the reality of this bill. We had in testimony a constituent from the good citizen in my good friend, the representative of East Multnomah County, his district. Her son literally died as a result of not having these AEDs. AEDs make all the difference in the world in a life-saving experience. Every minute that somebody's down is 10% less likely they're going to survive a life-changing moment in cardiac condition. I apologize for getting emotional, but I've seen these things work. I've seen them work in athletic facilities. I've seen them work in shopping malls. I've seen them work on athletic fields, and I've seen them work personally using them in a LifePak 12. The reality is what we're talking about here is about $1,200. A lot of businesses voluntarily do that now. Large places where people congregate in large amounts, we're asking for those businesses to come forward. And the businesses themselves, quite honestly, we heard from Fred Myers, we heard from the grocery industry, we heard from folks that were not opposed to this bill. But for some reason, we want to say that they can't afford it, and they've stepped forward to say that perhaps they can. All I'm saying is I would urge an aye vote. These are life-changing. These will make every bit of difference, and these do save lives. Thank you, and please support Senate Bill 556A.
Further discussion, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we've talked probably more than we should on this particular bill. And one doesn't always intend to do so. But when you hear in this body how we can mandate to one group because we suppose we know how well they're doing or not, maybe we should know more about the bottom line of the industries and small businesses being impacted by this kind of legislation. It's okay to say we're not going to take care of kids in schools, we're not going to take care of communities who gather in schools, but for you businesses who are experiencing in your area 18 and 20% unemployment, yes, we know you're doing just fine, you pay the bill and you do this. We can't mandate it on schools because of the current financial position. If schools feel the financial position, how about those businesses who are trying to pay the taxes to fund the schools? Do we lose sight on really where the revenue is coming from? If Oregon really has a revenue shortfall, as has been discussed in this building, and that revenue comes from those taxpayers, how can we say you pay the bill, you're unaffected? Somehow we're missing the mark here, folks. You can't say one group's not impacted and another is exempted. The very folks who might want to pay the bill are the ones struggling to get the revenue to do it. They're the ones struggling to put the folks in our districts to work. They're the ones struggling because their bottom line isn't there either. Let's be careful how we talk about this when we just make an assumption that because somebody has 50,000 square feet under their roof, they're making money. We got businesses closing right and left in this state and people losing employment right and left to the tune of 260,000 people plus out of work. And we're making the assumption that business is fine. Go talk to one of those folks about their income statement and see what it looks like. Check your dividends on stock you own and see if you're getting more or less. Take a look at what Oregon's capital gains collections will be. More or less? Rhetorical questions, because we know the answer, it's less. Don't make the assumption they're all fine.
Further discussion, Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I sat in committee to listen to the testimony. This bill is an excellent idea. The problem is the implementation's wrong. We should have brought a bill forward to offer businesses a tax credit to the tune of $2,000 or $3,000, 100% tax and credit to invest in buying one of these units to put in their businesses. We shouldn't be mandating businesses to have to go buy this. This is the wrong bill and the wrong time. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Boone, do you wish to close?
Oh, yeah. First, I'd like to address again what the bill does and what it covers, what it requires. That is a facility, which we are assuming is a structure, 50,000 square feet or more, and at least 25 individuals congregating on a normal business day. This is the legislative body here. We have at least 25 people in this building. So this building would qualify. How big is 50,000 square feet? What, almost an acre, maybe? It's a pretty big business. It's not a small, it's not every small business in Oregon. One of the additional, one of the people who, actually we didn't have the opposition that we're hearing on the floor today, we had support from a wide variety of advocacy. I think we had part of it listed. We had grocers, the Red Cross, fire departments, Boley, BOMA, the building owners management, the people who own these big buildings. One of the most compelling pieces of testimony that we had was from Dr. Eric Strecker from OHSU, who's the cardiac professor of cardiology. And he states, out-of-hospital cardiac arrest is the leading cause of death in the U.S., with between 200 and 400,000 cases per year, and the mortality rate is 90 to 95%. This is not, we are not talking about ER or some of the shows that you see on TV where somebody goes down and somebody jumps on them and starts doing CPR and they bring them back. That just does not happen in 95% of the cases. However, if somebody goes down and you jump on them and put a, you go through this process with the AED, you just might bring them back. Most of the recoverable arrhythmias do not resolve with CPR alone. CPR just keeps the heart and brain functioning long enough for someone with a defibrillator to arrive. And this is your fire department, usually. If you had one in the building and people knew where it was, they could jump in and get there before the fire department. The odds of mortality increase by approximately 10% for each minute of delay in defibrillation. That means if somebody goes down, every minute they decrease 10%. So in 10 minutes, they're gone. You can't bring them back. And what if there's traffic? What if something happens? What if you're in an area where your response time from your emergency services is a little bit longer? If you had one of these, you could save a life.
And I guess I would finally ask you to consider if your loved one was someplace and they had a heart attack or an arrhythmia or something happened that they went down, wouldn't you want them to be saved? Because the other thing that's not mentioned here today is how long you can go, how long the brain can go without the oxygen. And then you've got some real problems if you do save this person. So I think you have to think in terms of saving a life, and it's a small price to pay if you consider what it costs when, if you don't act quickly and there's more damage to the heart and the brain. So colleagues, I would ask you to consider this, and this is not asking every small business in Oregon to do this. Only those with the 50,000 square foot footprint on the building and 25 people every day, every business day. Please support the bill.
Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Barker votes no. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Chris Edwards remembers that we have a House rule that requires people to vote and votes aye. Senate Bill 556A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. In the interest of the hour, we are going to carry over the remaining bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills be carried over to their proper place on Thursday, June 4th, 2009, third reading calendar. Is there objection? Representative Kotek, you're not in the queue to object, I assume. Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Kotek, you want to, can you wait till announcement's okay? Other business of the House, other business of the Senate, orders of the day have been completed. Announcements, effective immediately, I'm making the following appointment to the Willamette River Cleanup Authority. Representative Brent Barton. Further announcements. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Springer to change her vote on Senate Bill 409. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Kotek requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and allow Representative Springer to change her vote on Senate Bill 409. It will not change the outcome. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Springer votes aye. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd also like to request to suspend the rules to allow Representative Cameron to change his vote on Senate Bill 515. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Kotek requests unanimous consent to allow Representative Cameron to change his vote on Senate Bill 515. It will not change the outcome. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Cameron votes aye. Further announcements. Going. Remonstrances. Representative Gelser.
Thank you. Quickly, Mr. Speaker, the good representative from the Christmas Tree Valley informed me that I owe an apology to the good representative from District 59 for failing to recognize that the gorilla of the maraschino cherry industry actually resides in the Dalles. Every year, the Dalles has a cherry festival, and from April 22nd to the 26th of this year, they had the Maraschino Magic Festival. So to the good representative from District 59, I am very sorry for not sharing the glory of the maraschino cherry with you. It is truly a source of pride for our entire state, and you have much to be proud of in your Maraschino Valley district. Thank you.
Further remonstrances, Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Though this is not new news, it is terribly discomforting to report this. For all of you who pay attention to your state legislators magazine, it's distressing to point out that, yes, we're number 50. We are number 50. We are number 50. What a terrible thing to have to say about the state we represent. MainStreet.com, on the happiness index, ranking states on how well they are weathering the current economic storm, puts Oregon at absolutely number 50. So we have the pleasure of being second highest in unemployment and number 50 on the happiness index. Colleagues, I would like to hope that in this body, one, we were passing legislation to put people to work in this state, and two, that we were recognizing the state of the economy and passing legislation that recognizes that and promotes business and the economy in this state. If you haven't looked at the index of the happiness and you want to hear it again, yes, we are number 50. Let's work to change that.
Further remonstrances, Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just wanted to say the conversation today on the floor made me much happier.
Further remonstrances. Adjournment, Representative Tomei.
Mr. Speaker, with a big smile on my face, we will adjourn tomorrow until tomorrow, Thursday, June 4th at 9:45 a.m.
Representative Tomei moves that the House adjourn until 9:45 a.m. Again, 9:45 a.m. on Thursday, June 4th, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.